Om Agnatamirandasya Jana Jana Salakaya Chaksus Anvilitam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namah Sri Chaitanya Manovistam Stapitam Jena Vutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sapandantikam. Last night and this morning, when we began our katas, the surroundings were walls. Now that the walls have broken down, we can see Giriras. And even more importantly than we can see Giriras is that Giriras can see us. So we are under his very kind, merciful, and nourishing gaze. And that is our great fortune. When Mahaprabhu was speaking to Rupa Goswami in the 19th chapter of Madhya Lila, he described this point of Brahmanda Brahmate Konya Bhagyavan Jeev, that the living entity, that means us, we wander. This is also described in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Where the living entity's wandering is described as some type of a creature, practically speaking, on a tree. And the tree is upside down. The branches are down and the roots are up. And the different branches and sub-branches the living entities are jumping to, one after another, after another, after another, after another. And these basically are the objects of our desires. We jump from one place to another, based upon our desires. And again, this tree is upside down because it is a reflection. And our desires are a reflection of our real desires and are a reflection of who we actually are. Indeed, in one of the purports, Srila Prabhupada explains that the tree of our material existence sits upon our desires just as the reflection of a tree sits on water. My dear devotees, please think about this point, that our situation in the material world is based upon our desires. So this is a very frightening thought, but it is also, at least some of the time, it's a terrifying thought. If my desires were to be actualized into reality, I don't know if anyone else would be alive yet. They would all be finished at one time or another. My situation is situated on my desires. And this very magical point, very mystical point, and practical point leads us to the conclusion that we should be very careful about what we desire. An even still more wonderful conclusion, that we should increase our deepest, most heartfelt, perfect desires, our deepest Krishna conscious desires. They should flame. They should burst into flames. And they should burn to ashes every other desire. And this process, and why? Why should we do this? Why should we do this? We know so many philosophical answers to the question why we should do this, why we should penetrate into the depths of spiritual desires and have them burn and blaze, and why we should, we have so many philosophical answers, why we should remove all the material desires from our heart, but the philosophy generally is not sufficient. One reason is because there's such a practical little example of this that I once heard. Think about anything you want. You ready? Think about anything you want except for
pizza.
No, not pizza. Monkeys. Obviously, monkeys. Think about anything but monkeys, especially the ones with the red bottoms. Don't think about them. Try to stop thinking about what you don't want to think about, and your mind tends to focus on that very thing. Of course, no one should be thinking about red-bottom monkeys now. So the process of spiritual life is really a process of param drisva navartite. It's pushing away quickly, slowly, gently, with force, somehow or another, pushing away the insignificant so that the flames of our deepest desires will be manifest before Giriraj, before the dust of Vrindavan, to the Vaishnavas, to the exalted Acharyas. And then, by their mercy, and really it will come to this, by mercy, then we will advance and we will go home.
We will go.
In the middle of Chaitanya Charitamrita, which of course is Madhya Lila, and I couldn't figure out what to title this class, because it's this series of lectures, because it started one way and then it transformed into something else, and it moves this way and then it moves that way. So, but I know it's about a journey. The real important journey, the spiritual journey, the journey that each and every one of us are on, from the branches of the material world, which have captivated me for so many lives, with so many hopes, so many frustrations, so many hopes born of frustrations, so many desires born of envy. I see someone else has something, and why does he have that? I want it. So many desires born of pride. Pride and envy are the closest of friends. You can't have one without the other. And I've been led for countless births, and now, as this body, I can still say I'm getting older, but I can now officially say I'm old. A few years ago, when I went to purchase a train ticket in Mathura, the man looked at me and gave me a 25% discount without even asking how old I was. People It even happened actually once in Australia. I was in a bus and in Hong Kong on a train, and people are starting to stand up to give me seats. Let the aged sit down. But then the greatest danger of old age is that the frustrations, they sit in the heart so deeply. And you see the young people running. And you think, I used to be able to run. And then the next thought is, only if I could run again. And the desire is planted for my next body, a body that I can run. And all the frustrations, the things I think I should have had and wanted to have, they are planted in the heart. Only if this. If only this and if only that. And one of the things that Srila Prabhupada taught us very strongly, there should be only one if only. Only one. If only I had love for Krishna. The real thing. Because that one gives meaning to everything. And without that one, nothing else has meaning, because we'll still be on the tree of material life. So let us pray to Giriraj that those other desires will become meaningless. Yes, this bad thing has happened to me in my life, and I wish this hadn't happened, and I wish I had made that choice and this choice. But forget it. Tateinu kampam susamikshamano. I must have deserved it. I must have done it to someone else. Now it's even. I just want to love Krishna and serve Krishna and serve tadiyanam samacharam, those who are tadiya, who are close to Krishna. And then we can ask, who is not close to Krishna, who I shouldn't serve? And that's why we sit here in front of Giriraj and feel nourished, because Giriraj is even willing to serve me. He's even willing to nourish me. He doesn't. Don't count up the goods and the bads, Giriraj. Just be kind and let your mercy flow on all the devotees. Flow, flow, flow. So we want to pray, express our desires very deeply, ever deepeningly. Let them burst into flames. And to hear, and this is the journey from the material world to the lotus feet of Krishna. And again, as we'll mention it in the classes as well that I'll give, is that when Mahaprabhu was dancing, he could reciprocate with all the devotees. When Krishna was sitting, surrounded by his cowherd boyfriends, by Krishna's sarva sankalpa shakti, by his potency by which all his desires are fulfilled, all the devotees, all the coward boys were looking at him, and he was looking at them. But my dear devotees, note that it was by Krishna's sarva sankalpa shakti his desires were fulfilled, and the devotees were able to see him, because Krishna has the potency, the ability to reciprocate with everyone, every soul, everyone. That is Krishna's desire. And now, bhule se jeev anadiya bahimu, turning our back on Krishna. It's peculiar, isn't it, when someone turns their back on you? It's peculiar. Don't do it to me. I don't want to taste the medicine right now. It's so peculiar. And that is what we have done to Krishna. Now let us use this time to either slowly or very quickly turn. That is actually, Srila Jiva Goswami says, this is the purpose of sadhana bhakti, or of bhakti, the process of bhakti. It is to go from bhaimukh to samukh, from back to Krishna to facing Krishna. So this is our journey. This is every soul's journey. And it's going to begin in the middle, because usually we want to begin at the beginning, naturally. But we'll begin in the middle, meaning the middle of Chaitanya Charitamrita. And we'll begin at the beginning of the middle, but soon we'll get to the middle of the middle. And that's where we'll really begin. Because Chaitanya Charitamrita in Madhya Lila, it begins when Mahaprabhu has taken sannyas. And is it okay still? Huh? No, it's okay. Mahaprabhu has taken sannyas, and it's interesting, of course, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami in the first two chapters of Madhya Lila, he describes, he begins by describing the Antya Lila and Mahaprabhu's later pastimes and the ecstatic transformations that he goes through. And when I think of Mahaprabhu, especially lately, I'm thinking of what a wonderful opportunity we have, because the Supreme Lord, who we are trying to turn to, he is acting as a teacher. And he, the all-powerful, unlimited Lord, is going to teach us how we can turn to him in the fullest way, and how to make the desire to love him burst into flames. He's going to teach us this by his own example, by his own activities. He's going to teach us this by his dealings with his devotees, who mostly he always keeps around him. And he's going to teach us this through the mouths and activities of his devotees. But he's going to teach us how to come to him in the most special mood, and that is the mood of the residents of Vrindavan. Because the residents of Vrindavan, they are always inflamed in their consciousness. The flames of their love for Krishna has long ago burned to ashes anything that might stand in the way of their love for Krishna. Krita krita punja, krita punja punja. And their love for Krishna is completely undivided. And this point will come up in the journey that we will discuss. It is undivided. It is focused only. Vyavya satmika buddhi. And because it is focused, it cuts through everything else like a laser. And when that love is brought to its perfection, in the second chapter, Mahaprabhu exhibits the transformations of ecstasy. And Mahaprabhu's transformations of ecstasy are so, they have never been exhibited before, because Mahaprabhu's teachings are so unique. And what happens to his transcendental body is inconceivable. I heard one Vaishnava describe it as, because Mahaprabhu, water will come from his eyes like the Ganga, and the devotees that are surrounding him as he's experiencing the internal moods of ecstasy, they become bathed. All the devotees become bathed by the water like syringes being shot from his eyes. Sometimes his bodily limbs are retracted into his body. Sometimes there's 6 inches, I still think in inches, Anyone can translate that into centimeters? 15 centimeters. The joints, the space between the joints of his body. And his body gets bumps on it. One Vaishnava described this as that if you took an ordinary old bicycle and you attached the engine of a jet plane to it and you ignited that and whoosh, that body of that bicycle could not accommodate the force, the power of the jet engine. That is what love for Krishna is like when it is burning within the heart. The body cannot accommodate it. The mind, the material mind, it cannot accommodate it. Sometimes the devotees, at this point always staggers me, when Mahaprabhu explains to Prakasananda Saraswati that the essence of the Bhagavatam, the whole Srimad Bhagavatam with its 12 cantos, is the verse 8, evam vratasa priya nama kirtya jatanu raga jutta chitta uchai, that when one, this is the essence of the Bhagavatam, when one experiences the proper result of chanting Krishna's names, one becomes like a madman. One jumps up in the air, laughs, cries, falls to the ground, tears, screams, everything. All in relationship with loving exchanges with Krishna. And then we are home. Prema Pamarto Mahan. Then we are home. In love with Krishna. In relationship with Krishna. And the great fault of being on the tree of material life is our back is to Krishna. And when our back is into Krishna, is facing Krishna, we are not in relationship with Krishna. And therefore, there is a deep emptiness in every soul's heart. Within the core of his heart, there is an emptiness. And if we place the entire universe in there to try the material universe, or tens of universes, we will not fill that emptiness, because that emptiness can only be filled by the ecstatic love for Krishna. When Mahaprabhu takes sannyas, and after Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami describes the end, the antya portion first, because he wants us to see that. He's afraid of dying, and he will not be able to express what he has heard from Raghunath Das Goswami, Krishnadas Kaviraj, because Raghunath Das Goswami has seen these final pastimes of Mahaprabhu, and Kaviraj Goswami is carrying this. He's carrying this, and he knows it's his duty, his responsibility, the love of his life, his service, his seva, to give this to the world, what Mahaprabhu exhibited as the goal. So Kaviraj Goswami writes this in the beginning of Madhyalila, and then he continues describing Mahaprabhu's taking sannyas, visiting the house of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and there seeing all the Vaishnavas who had been broken, the Nabadwip Mayapur Vaishnavas, whose hearts had been cracked by his taking sannyas and his leaving them. The most valuable, multifaceted, attractive jewel they have lost. How can we imagine? How can we imagine what it is like to have the most valuable jewel, and it is the most cherished thing in your possession, and then it is gone? They couldn't eat. They couldn't sleep. Mother Sachi remained motionless, not eating for 2 weeks. The devotees were stunned. They couldn't move, just like when Krishna left Vrindavan. Mother Yasoda didn't eat, didn't speak. And then Mahaprabhu returned by the tricks of Nityananda Prabhu. He returned and he was with the Vaishnavas again. And then he left for Puri because he had something very special to do there. And that very special thing had that very special thing was a person, and that person was Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. And he wanted to capture the heart of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya because he wanted three people. He wanted Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he wanted Ramananda Roy, and he wanted Maharaj Prataparudra. And for this reason, he was going to Puri. He specifically had his eye on these three persons. But we should know, just think about that. What that would be like if Mahaprabhu had his eye on you and he decided, I want this one. Well, guess what? How could we be sitting here? How could we be sitting here unless we had a letter of invitation and a visa? A signed letter of invitation and a visa. The dust of Vrindavan is extraordinary. And to have it as our only mission for 7 days, basically to hear and chant about Krishna and fan the spark, that spark of desire that maybe is so small, or maybe it's, but fan it and fan it and fan it and fan it and fan it. You know how to fan it. Feed it. Mahaprabhu had kirtan there in the house of Advaitacharya. He left for Puri. He stayed there for only a few days. And he ignited a fire in Jagannath Puri, especially with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, that was going to raise the entire holy city in flames of the Sankirtan movement in time. Then, after a week, 2 weeks, he left. And he went on his South India tour. And that is described in chapter 7. And in chapter 8, he meets because these three are very deeply connected. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Ramananda Roy, and Maharaj Prataparudra. So on the desire of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he meets Ramananda Roy. And Ramananda, of course, the 8th chapter of the Madhya Leela is a very most exalted chapter. The conversation between these exalted personalities, the most exalted personalities, is high, it's exalted. But then Mahaprabhu, in chapter 9, he visits all the holy places in South India and sends Ramananda Roy back to Puri. Even though Ramananda Roy is like the king of that district, he expresses his desire, I want to be with you in Puri. Go back there. Ramananda Roy, we will hear what happens. He goes back. So Mahaprabhu in chapter 9 tours the holy places of South India all the way down to Cape Comorin, Rameshwaram, and then he comes back in chapter 10. In chapter 10, he returns to Puri and meets devotees. All the Puri devotees have been waiting for him for 2 years, and he meets them. In chapter 11, the Bengali devotees come. In chapter 12, they prepare for the Rath Yatra by cleaning the Gundicha Margin, the temple. In chapter 13, which is the very middle of the middle, the essence, in one sense, the Rath Yatra festival takes place. Very special, because in that festival, and what Madhavananda Prabhu was speaking about is very much reflected in chapter 13, the Rath Yatra festival. The heart of Mahaprabhu is exhibited, the heart of Srimati Radharani. Then in 14, there's Vrindavan pastimes. In 15, the residents of Bengal go back to Bengal in a very touching way. In chapter 16, Mahaprabhu tries to go to Braj. Now, what I will be speaking about in chapter 17, he leaves for Braj, and in 18, he tours Vrindavan. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Krishna himself in the mood of Srimati Radharani, walked around Govardhan Hill. Just probably very close to here, Mahaprabhu's lotus feet stepped. But chapter 10, when I began to prepare for this class, I saw something that struck me that I had never noticed before, that chapter 10 and chapter 11 and chapter 12 and chapter 13 and 14 and 15 and 16, seven chapters of Madhya Lila speak about the relationship that Mahaprabhu had with Maharaj Prataparudra, and how Mahaprabhu caught him. He wanted three people specifically: Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Ramananda Roy, and Maharaj Prataparudra. Maharaj Prataparudra's journey to ecstatic love for Krishna is a journey that has so many signposts that are relevant for us. And I wish to speak about his journey. And now, after that extremely long introduction, we will begin. In chapter 10, Mahaprabhu has returned to Jagannath Puri after touring South India. And this is how chapter 10 begins. If we can have some sweet music. That same melody, that kirtan melody, was so nice. Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya, Jaya Nityananda, Jaya Dvaita Chandra, Jaya Gaura Bhaktavinda. All glories to Lord Chaitanya. All glories to Nityananda. All glories to Advaita Chandra, and all glories to all the devotees of Lord Chaitanya. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu departed for South India earlier, King Prataparudra called Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya to his palace. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was the Rajki Pandit. He was the presiding Brahmin over the entire kingdom of Maharaj Prataparudra. When Sarvabhauma met with the king offered him a seat with all respect, and he inquired about news of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
The king said to the Bhattacharya, I have heard that one great personality has come from Bengal and is staying in your home. Mahaprabhu had already left. He had only stayed there for 7, 8, 9, 10 days. Maharaj Pataparuja inquired about this great personality. I have heard, he says, Maha Kripa Maya. I have heard that he is greatly merciful. That person who is staying in your house, he is greatly merciful. I have also heard that this great personality has shown you, Sarvabhauma, a great favor. At any rate, this is what I have heard from many different people. And now, please be merciful to me. Please, please arrange that I have darshan with him. I want to see him. I want his glance, this merciful personality's glance, to fall upon me. But the charger replied, all you have heard is true. But as far as an interview is concerned, a darshan is concerned, it is very difficult to arrange. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is a sannyasi, very strict. He's in the renounced order. And he's completely detached from worldly affairs. He only stays in lonely, solitary places. And even in his dreams, even when he dreams, he would never grant a darshan to a king. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's hopes were high. A person who is so merciful is nearby, staying with someone who I'm so intimate with. And that person is telling me that he would never grant me a chance to see him. Suddenly, this is part of the journey of spiritual life. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya has a desire. And Mahaprabhu, in his own ways, slowly, surely, in wonderful ways, is going to take this spark and he's going to make it flame. And he's going to give him mercy. That's the ending. I don't want anyone to become sad at this point. Because there must be, everything must end sweetly. But, my dear devotees, he's going to have to go through the journey. The whole thing. His heart is going to have to be broken in a million pieces. He's going to have to stop thinking of himself as the king. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya next said, because even when you're the king's pundit, you always have to be careful when dealing with a king. All that you have heard is true, but it is difficult to arrange. But still, I would have tried to arrange a darshan. But he has recently left on his tour of South India. The king thought, because this was directly after, this is Purve before. The king thought, but why has he left Jagannath Puri? But the charger replied, this is the way of great personalities. They go to holy places of pilgrimage just to purify them. And for that reason, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is visiting many tirthas and delivering many, many other conditioned souls. And then he quotes from when Vidura came to visit
his uncle Dhritarashtra. In the third canto of the Bhagavatam, it is described how Vidura left. Oh, the Bhagavatam is so wonderful. It is a guidebook for our journey. We should read the Bhagavatam regularly. Because Vidura, he left the palace because he spoke the truth. As we have heard this wonderful saying from Satchinanda Maharaj, where he heard it from, he has not yet revealed. But he who speaks the truth must have a very fast horse. It is an old Indian saying, but not this India, the other India, Indians. So, there was so much intrigue in the palace. This Duryodhana, he was acting so terribly. He was acting so terribly. And Dhritarashtra, because he was being so cruel to Krishna's devotees, the Pandavas, and Dhritarashtra was listening to him. And it was causing such a great disaster. And Vidura, who was honest, he spoke the truth. And he said, why are you listening to Duryodhana? He is offense personified. And worst of all, he is envious of Krishna. And when Duryodhana heard this, he was like a snake, a cobra that has been kicked. He bit immediately. He bit Vidura and said, this person is speaking against those who are maintaining him. We should kick him out of the palace immediately. We should leave him with nothing but his breath. What does that mean? At least we're not going to kill him. And he should feel fortunate that he's not going to be killed for speaking like that against me. Because the personification of envy means simply to have a false ego. That's what it means. Everyone who has a false ego personifies envy, because that's what false ego means. Turning the back on Krishna. I'm the center. This is called illusion, because we can never be the center, obviously. So, in any case, when Vidura heard this, he put his bow down, took off his armor, his weapons, and walked out of the palace. And he didn't return for tens of years. He walked out of the palace of his easy situation, and he went on pilgrimage. He went from one holy place to another, and at some point, after years and years on pilgrimage, in quite close to Hastinapur, Delhi, he met Uddhava, the great devotee of Krishna. Krishna himself said that no one is as dear to me as you, Uddhava. Even my own body is not as dear to me as you. This is Krishna speaking. It is so important that we get to know Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is Ishwara. He is Param Ishwara. But he's so much more. He's Bhakta Vatsalya Krishna. And herein, we will hear soon, is the secret of turning to Krishna, knowing how dear, how Krishna. Krishna says, Lord Narayan says, he aswatantra. I am not independent. aham bhakta paradino. I am completely dependent on my devotees. Hi aswatantra iva dvija. He's speaking to Durvasa Muni, who was such a powerful Muni, so powerful, who lived in Braja, but so powerful, but he was mixed in his devotion with Muniness, which means that he had desire for mystic powers too. Just think how wonderful it would be if you could create a planet and you could have only the people that you like on that planet. That would be quite convenient. Or you could stretch your arm and take anything you want from anywhere, or have all your desires fulfilled, or control anyone you want. Now, if you want to enjoy the material world, Ishwaraham Mahom Bogi, you need to be powerful. This, again, is the personification of envy, false ego. So there was a little bit of that in Durvasa Muni. And he made the mistake of becoming angry and pointing his enmity at Ambarish Maharaj, who was a great devotee, and the great devotee was protected by Krishna's chakra. And Durvasa Muni found himself in trouble, and he went to Lord Narayan and said, "Oh Lord Narayan, this chakra is chasing me, protect me." And Lord Narayan said, "No, he aswatantra. I am not independent. I myself cannot stop this chakra. I am dependent upon my devotees." Sadubhya grasta ridaya, that the devotees, this is Krishna himself speaking, they have captured me in their hearts. And this is the mystery of Braja. All that is going on in Braja is going on due to the magical, mystical, most powerful influence of the prema, of the love of the Brijbasis. They are pulling all the strings in Vrindavan, and Yogamaya even is serving them. Prem reigns supreme in Braj, controlling Krishna completely. And then Lord Narayana says, "Bhaktar Bhakta Jana Priya." Not only are my devotees dear to me, but even the devotees of my devotees are dear to me. So Uddhava, Krishna himself said that Uddhava is more dear to me than my own body. And by chance, which means by Krishna's arrangement, Uddhava met Vidura after he had left the palace after many years. And Uddhava heard, or Uddhava was present when Krishna, almost when Krishna left the planet, and he told Vidura to hear the Bhagavatam in the exchange in the third canto, to hear the Bhagavatam from Maitreya Muni in Haridwar. And he stayed there in the third and the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam. All this is described. And then Vidura becomes inspired to return to Hastinapur. Now as a sadhu, after being traveling for tens of years, after hearing the Bhagavatam from Maitreya Muni, he returns, which is in the 13th chapter of the first canto. And Yudhisthira, when he sees Vidura, he speaks this verse. He says, saints of your caliber, Bhavad Vidas Bhagavatas, that devotees like you, O Vidura, they are walking places of pilgrimage because Gadabrita, the Lord who carries the club, you are in their hearts. And this, we will come to at some point, when in the 12th chapter of this Madhya Lila, before the Rath Yatra ceremony can take place, before the heart of Srimati Radharani can be revealed by Mahaprabhu in the Rath Yatra ceremony. There's a little cloth there. First, Gundicha Marjanam must be done. The heart must be cleansed. And then the Lord and Prabhupada, in the most incredible purport on this, he describes when the heart is cleansed, then the Dhamma can descend in the heart. And then when the Dhamma is there, then Krishna can be invited to live in our hearts. And then Prabhupada, in a very practical way, says, then when we have done this, when we've cleansed the heart of all these unnecessary things, these things that we don't really want, the things that we're attached to and we're jumping from one branch to another, when they are all gone and our heart is completely cleansed, and Balaram's mercy, Nityananda Prabhu's mercy, descends in the heart, and then we beg Krishna to enter our hearts and sit in our cleansed hearts, and Prabhupada says, then we should hold a festival. He was speaking not theoretically. We should hold a festival, invite all the devotees. So this kind of a devotee was Vidura, and Yudhisthira Maharaj recognized him and spoke this verse. You are carrying the Lord in your heart. You are a walking place of pilgrimage. So he's speaking about why Mahaprabhu was traveling. Oh, I should warn you that I decided to make the journey through these chapters a leisurely journey, a happy journey. And sometimes when you take a journey, like when you get on a plane, that's the speedy journey. And you arrive in Vrindavan, and then maybe 2 or 3 or 4 days later, your mind arrives. But this kind of a journey, the old-fashioned pilgrimage type of a journey, you walk. You go a little slowly, and you have a chance to think about it, where I'm going. Instead of having the great advancement of technology, of every person has movie screens right in front of them, their eyes, to absorb their consciousness, so they have the great opportunity to think about anything but Vrindavan as they're coming. But when you walk and you take the slow journey and you see everything that you see in relationship to where you're going, then what happens when I get there? I've been thinking about it. Oh, I'm going to sit by Vrindavan. I'm going to hear about the Manashiksha. I'm going to hear about the pastimes of Krishna. I'm going to see Giriraj. I'm going to see these unique trees of Vrindavan that are like nowhere else in the whole world. I'm going to see the Kunds of Vrindavan. I'm going to see Krishna and Balaram and Radhashyama Sundar and Gaunatayana and Srila Prabhupada Samadhi. And then if we take the slow way of going, then our mind arrives long before our body does. And then when we are there and ready to burst into flames. So here, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya tells Maharaj Pataparudra why Mahaprabhu has left, because he's a saintly person traveling from one place to the next. And this, to be merciful to others, is what Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya tells him. This is the activities of a Vaishnava. They are merciful by nature. they give to others. And sometimes we may think that before I can give to others, I have to be completely full and overflowing myself. And yes, that's true. But there is something miraculous about the preaching movement of Mahaprabhu and the Panchatattva, is that the more we distribute, the more we have ourselves. And this is a secret of how a beggar can become a wealthy man. But then, after describing that Mahaprabhu is a great Vaishnava, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya describes something else. He says, Teho Jivana Hena Hai Swatantra Ishwara. He is not actually an ordinary Jiva. He is not an ordinary person like you and I, a soul trapped in the material world who has become saintly, but he's the independent Supreme Lord, the personality of Godhead. And then the king said, well, that being the case, he's so wonderful, why did you let him leave? After all, he's a king. That's how kings think. Why did you let him leave? Why didn't you fall at his lotus feet and beg him to stay? Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya replied, he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, and he is completely independent. He is not dependent on anyone else, but still I endeavored hard to keep him here. But because he's the Supreme Lord and completely independent, I was not successful. And as soon as the king heard this, that the Supreme Personality of Godhead was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was the Supreme Lord. As soon as he heard this, the king heard this from the Bhattacharya, he immediately accepted it. So much of the problems that we go through would be avoided if we had this kind of purity. Prabhupada in the purport explains that Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was the guru of King Maharaj Prataparudra. And when the guru said, Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the king said, yes, I accept it. And Srila Prabhupada explained in Mayapur in 1976 in one lecture that I've become very fond of quoting. Prabhupada said that the purpose of our reading all the books, literatures, Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavatam, is to understand, to become convinced that Krishna is all-powerful and all-merciful. And then, he said, then we will be able to surrender to him. Because if he's all-powerful but not all-merciful, he is extremely dangerous. At any time, he could take us and... And if he's all-merciful but not all-powerful, he's well-meaning but, but not very helpful. Of Srimad Bhagavatam Bhagavad Gita, I can show you the direct what he said too. So, and then Prabhupada said, for a fortunate person, that surrender, it can take just a second. because we trust Krishna. That's like the child walking across the dangerous street, holding on to the hand, and one hand holding mommy's hand and the other hand holding father's hand. The street is dangerous, but the child isn't in anxiety because he's in the right hands. So I really wanted to call this not only the journey. Oh! It's important that we trust Krishna. And if we trust Krishna, if we just simply, sincerely say once, Sakrit eva bapanam cha, tava smiti cha, yachite, if we just pray one time, Krishna, I am yours. Dadamye tadvata mama, I will award this person fearlessness. I am yours. This is a good time to to be thinking, praying. Well, sincerely, I am yours. I am yours. This is what I want. I may be in so many ways debilitated and broken and lame and hurt and well, this is Kali Yuga. No one comes through without scars. But if we are in Krishna's hands, even though we may go up and down and this and that, but we are in Krishna's hands. We are in Krishna's hands, and we have his promise. We have his promise in 100 ways, 1,000 ways. And if we try to do some service for him, we will even quickly become experienced. Personal experience that Krishna is there protecting his devotees. Little things, little hints, the little tap on the shoulder that just is so intimate, it's between you and him. As Mataji Jagtriti was saying yesterday, just something that sounds so ordinary, just in a bad mood in Vrindavan and just wanting to get lost and hide and just walking this way and just seeing it all the chaos in Vrindavan with the pigs and the monkeys and the this and the that and the, and I'm sure you didn't mention the plastic bags, but I'm sure they were there too. But seeing the whole thing there spread, but seeing Giriraj there too. And knowing that Giriraj's blessings were on everyone. Blessings, plural, were on everyone, on everyone. Then it's being held one hand, the other hand, and devotees who have done service again have their experiences. Everyone has their experiences, and this is a good thing to talk about very intimately with the devotees. Well, why are you so convinced? How do you go on? What makes you go on? Very privately and intimately, we ask questions. This is the Dhammi, this is Guyam Akyati Prichati. This is association with devotees. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, he is independent, I tried, but what can I do? And then the king said, because you are learned and experienced, and when you address Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as Lord Krishna, I accept this as truth. But when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu returns again, I wish to see him just once, in order to make my eyes perfect. But you know what just once means. It's not that you can see the beauty of Vrindavan once, see Krishna's beauty with his lotus eyes once and not want to taste it forever. But this is a way. I don't want much. Just one time. Eka Bindu Dia. Just one time. I'm asking you. That's not a lot. I'm not asking much. Just one time. Please arrange me to see the Lord when he returns. So this all happened before the Lord came back. And now, in this 10th chapter, which we're reading from, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, after being away for 2 years, he returns. Or very soon he's going to return. And then Savabhauma Bhattacharya says, Mahaprabhu will return very soon. I want to have a nice place for him to stay. That's solitary and peaceful. No loudspeakers. Lord Chaitanya's residence should be secluded and near the Jagannath Mandir. Please consider this. And please, you're the king. Please give him a nice place to stay. And the king immediately replied, and this is what we're going to see. Throughout the entire journey, and there are going to be times where the king's heart is breaking. But throughout the whole journey, we're going to see this characteristic of Maharaj Pataparudra, that he was willing, ready, and able to serve. And however he could serve, he did it. And there's such irony. Anyway, I won't tell the future too much, and you all know it anyway, but I will tell it. The irony is he did so many things as the king. He did so many things. He arranged this. He got the Mahaprasadam. He arranged cloth for Mahaprabhu to wear on his head directly from Lord Jagannath. But what was it that actually completely softened Mahaprabhu's heart and caused him to give his full mercy? He swept the road. He swept the road. He did the most humble service. But he did the humble service and everything else he did in a simple and serving mood to please Lord Jagannath, to please Mahaprabhu, to please the Vaishnavas. It was simple and humble. And that's what melted Mahaprabhu's heart. There may be some clues in this for us. So this was really the beginning of Prataparudra Maharaj's journey. No, but not the end of the music. And this is described in this wonderful Chaitanya Charitamrita is so wonderful, and the Bhagavatam is so wonderful, and the Krishna book is so wonderful. The 10th canto of the Bhagavatam is so wonderful. And the Bhagavad Gita is so wonderful. There it is. So wonderful. But especially the 10th canto is so wonderful too. And Chaitanya Charitamrita just builds on that. And in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, there is one pastime that tells something very, very important. And this occurs in the 51st chapter. In the 50th chapter, Jarasandha has attacked the city of Mathura so many times. And then on the final time, the 17th time, at the same time that Jarasandha is attacking Mathura because he's angry at Krishna, because Krishna has killed his daughter's husband, who has the name of Kamsa. He's done nothing wrong, Kamsa, this innocent fellow, Kamsa. And Krishna had the nerve to kill him. And Jarasandha is so angry at Krishna, he attacks him again and again and again. And it's actually so funny that each time that Jarasandha attacked, Krishna single-handedly defeated his army and then tied him up and then let him go. And that reminds me of two things. One thing especially, and then something that Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said. It reminds me so much of me, because I do the same foolish things again and again, and I lose and I get tied up, and still I try again and again to enjoy in foolish ways, and I get tied up. Jarasandha had this tendency as well. And also, Krishna was showing him, because if you have an enemy that you're afraid of, and the last thing you're going to do is after you capture him is just let him go, because that shows, it's such an insult to a Kshatriya. You're so insignificant, go away. Go ahead, do what you want. You want to attack again? Go away. If you want to go and cry and hide, go away. As you like, go. And each time Jarasandha forgot. Because bad association. They said, next time, Jarasandha, next time you'll be able to be. He was lucky that time. Beware, my dear devotees, of bad association. So on the 17th time, then at the exact same time that Jarasandha was attacking, this is in the 50th chapter, then this Kaliyavana attacked, and there's a whole long history of who Kaliyavana was, he was produced by the pride of the Yadu dynasty. Actually, they became proud and didn't listen to their Gaugarishi, and therefore he was produced to give them trouble. So in any case, because he was a Yavana, he was untouchable and Krishna wouldn't kill him. He just walked from the battlefield out of Mathura. And Jarasandha and this Kaliyavana was chasing him and chasing him and chasing him and chasing him, trying to capture Krishna. But Krishna will not be captured so easily. Maharaj Pataruja is going to find that out. We will all find this out. There are secrets that you have to know to capture Krishna. And you have to have love for Krishna. That's the real secret. Prema Pamarto Mahan. This is the secret of Vrindavan. The Braja Gopis, they tell Krishna, when he's a baby, you dance and we'll give you sweets. And they clap their hands, and Krishna starts dancing. And they say, oh, you dance so nicely, Krishna. Now we'll give you sweets. And after Kamsa was killed, these huge wrestlers were fighting these young, delicate boys. And Krishna killed them. And the drums began to play and the bands began to play. And like celebration, and this was especially after Krishna dragged Kamsa's body around like a lion drags an elephant to show that he was actually dead. And then the bands began to play, and then Kamsa became so furious. He began to try to stop everything. And Krishna jumped up and Kamsa began to cry out, this rascal, he went mad. And he became the enemy. It came out, what was in his heart came out. And he said, this rascal, stop the drums, stop the music. Throw Vasudev, kill Vasudev, throw Nandamaraj, take away their possessions. And Krishna became so angry, he took him and he threw him down from the wrestling dais. And when Krishna does things, he does things very delicately. because he threw him from high in the dais. He didn't want to himself land in a hard place. So he landed on Kamsa's body. But before he did that, he assumed the entire weight of the universe. And he landed on Kamsa and killed him just like that. And then Krishna got up and he started dancing, and all the cowherd boys came around. The cowherd boys came down and they were jumping up and down. They were his friends. And their friend had been victorious over these huge wrestlers. And they started dancing, and then the cowherd boys started wrestling with Krishna and Balaram. And the boys were taking Krishna and Balaram and throwing them on the ground and defeating them. And they were saying, "I beat Krishna and Balaram," and they're jumping and dancing and playing. Because this is Braja. This is Braja, but it rules here. And this, of course, is the great city. This is the Parama Rahasya that's described by Lord Brahma in the Chatur-Sloka verses. This is the secret of Braja. Braja Prem rules. We cannot imitate, but we should know this. We should know this. So, Maharaj Pataparudra, oh yes, Muthukunda, yes. We have 2 more minutes. What time will you begin, actually? 12? Excuse me, Prashan. Sorry. 12:30, okay. So, this one verse that's not quoted in the Bhagavatam, but it's very appropriate. When Kaliyavana was running after Krishna trying to capture him, Krishna led him into a cave, and we know the pastime for us who have read the Bhagavatam and the Krishna book, that in the cave, Kaliyavana saw a sleeping person and thought it was Krishna. And naturally, what else would he do when he sees a sleeping person in the dark cave? He kicked him. And that person immediately woke up and burnt him to ashes. And that person was Muthukunda. And Muthukunda recognized Krishna as the Supreme Lord, and he offered such sweet prayers, such very sweet prayers to Krishna. Prayers that describe the danger of being a king in this material world. The danger of being trapped by all the material desires in this world. Trying to lord it over the material energy. The danger of that. Which forces us to go from planet to planet. Brahman to Brahman, Dekhonya Bhagavan Jeev. Wandering from birth to birth, to body to body, from branch to branch, chasing all these desires which won't bring us the happiness, just leading to so many more. And he describes the dangers, because after all, the person who is most capable of enjoying is the king. So Muthukunda describes the danger of being a king, being a lord, being a master, because that means power, power to enjoy. Without power, we can't enjoy. Get power and enjoy. That's the name of, that's the material life. It's gross. Power to enjoy means power to exploit the material energy. Purusha prakriti stohi bhunte prakriti janaya. Thinking ourselves purushas, enjoyers, lords. So he says, Muthukunda says, no, no. And then he says this one verse that begins, bhava apavargo brahmato yada bhave. Very important verse. And it means that when someone's time has come to end this endless, otherwise endless search for happiness in the material world. When someone's time has come, that is when he comes in contact with a devotee. I'll read the verse, and our acharyas have spoken about it in an interesting way, because the verse actually says that when your time has come, then you'll meet a devotee. Here's the verse. When the material life of a wandering soul has ceased, and this, after all, is what we are. That's what Brahmanda Brahmate Konya Bhagyavan Jeev means, that we wander. We're wanderers. When his time for wandering has ceased, he attains the association of your devotees. And then when he associates with devotees, it awakens in him devotion unto you, who are the goal of the devotees and the Lord of all causes and their effects. So our acharyas, Srila Jiva Goswami, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, they change things using a grammatical term called atisuyukta, and they explain what is really meant is that when your fortune comes and you associate with devotees, it is not that when your time for material life ends, then you associate with devotees. It is rather when you associate with devotees, then your material existence is over. You've been grabbed by the hands, by both hands, by Krishna. It's over. Just imagine, my dear devotees, how much our anxiety would actually end if we actually believe this one simple truth, that Krishna has us and we are under his care. I would like to read just one part of one paragraph of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comment on this verse. He says, everything Krishna does is initiated by the desire of his devotees. In the phrase sadgato from the verse, it is implied that Krishna is not the goal of one whose desires are on the level of the asat, the temporary. But his mercy is also dependent on the desires of the saintly devotees. I put that second sentence in the wrong place. But he says he's not the goal of those whose desires are in the temporary, in this jumping from branch to branch. We don't want that, do we? End here. We'll leave just a few moments for questions, if there are any questions or comments, and then at 12 o'clock we'll stop, and Maharaj's class will begin at 12:30. Thank you very much. Questions or comments? Thank you. Questions or comments? The question is, why do we find it hard to actually surrender, take shelter of Krishna, if we believe that Krishna is protecting us? It's so hard to believe that. And then when I said, you mean surrender? And you said, no. That's why it's so hard, because that's what surrender means. Gotripte varanam tata specifically means this: to place ourselves under Krishna's guardianship and accepting He is the one who is nourishing us and maintaining us. Jiva Goswami describes this in quite detail in Bhakti Sundarbha. He describes how this is the essence of surrender, placing our accepting Krishna as our maintainer, not a maintainer, but our guardian, nourisher, protector. And this mood of accepting Krishna is the one who is giving us our air, our life breath, our food, our giving us vision, giving us the strength in our arms. It's Him who's providing everything for us. And He always has been, and He always will be. And accepting this consciously, willingly, and accepting our relationship with Him, that I am yours, I'm your servant, how can I serve you in this relationship? What can I do for you in this relationship? How can I serve you? Accepting this is surrender. And this gives us the ability or the mood to feel that we belong to Him, to be part of His group, so to speak. Surrender, or giving ourselves to Krishna, gives us the mood of belonging to Krishna, being part of His family. That's the gift of consciousness that comes along with surrender and placing ourselves under Krishna's attention. So then the question turns to, what holds us back from giving ourselves to Krishna and placing ourselves under His protection? And Prabhupada said it's durdaivam, it's misfortune. So our misfortune can turn into fortune. Whatever debilities and lacks and improprieties or anything that we have that are our misfortune can turn into fortune through the process of surrender, because we become humble servants. So humble servants of servants. So, and that question usually comes up when you talk about humility and recognizing that I've done this wrong, and I'm deficient in this way, and there's this problem and that problem, and I don't have very much faith, and I lack. And the question comes up, isn't that just low self-esteem, just seeing the bad in yourself all the time? And isn't that beating yourself up, as they say nowadays? Or isn't that just some self-indulgent, neurotic behavior? And the answer is, surrender is completely different from low self-esteem. Because when we're thinking about how bad I am all the time, then who are we thinking about all the time? We're thinking about, oh, I'm so bad because I did this, and I'm so bad because I did this, and I'm so terrible because this person said this to me, and I'm so bad because of this. Who are we thinking about all the time? We're just simply thinking about ourselves. So that's not humility at all. Humility isn't thinking about yourself all the time, obviously. Humility is when you touch that feeling of insufficiency, or rather acknowledging that I'm an insignificant conditioned soul, and then giving ourselves to Krishna and placing ourselves under His protection and in service. It begins with acknowledging who we are, who we actually, we're Krishnas. We can't do anything about it. We want to be independent, but we're completely dependent upon Him. There's nothing we can do about it, even if we wanted to. It's only Maya that makes us think that we're separate from Krishna. So, touching our insufficiencies with our consciousness, and then praying deeply to Krishna for shelter and saying, I am yours, how can I serve you? Instead of thinking about just me all the time, how can I serve you? How can I do something for your pleasure? If I'm a king, let me serve as a king. If I'm a sweeper, let me serve as a sweeper. If I'm a king who's a sweeper, let me serve as a king who's a sweeper. But let me serve. And that is how Prabhupada translated in his initial translations of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. He made it so simple, but unlimitedly deep as well when he said, the translation of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is, O Lord, O energy of the Lord, O Krishna, O Srimati Radharani, please engage me in your service. Please allow me to serve you. I want to serve you. I want to turn towards you. Let me serve you. Give me something to do in your service. And let me make that an offering to you. Let me do it in such a way that you are pleased. Let me not make it my work, my all those other words, career, but let me make it my seva. This is my opportunity to do something for you. And what does Krishna taste after all? He tastes the sweetness of the love by which things are offered. That is what gives him the taste. Okay. Yes. Hare Krishna. I couldn't hear the. I heard up to, should we beg our guru for mercy? Should our prayers be directed towards guru, Krishna, or both? I mean, there are many ways to answer this question, and a lot depends upon who we are. But I would say, I'll answer it the way I would answer it, and then other devotees can also answer it. But first, we should never, ever neglect our spiritual master in offering our prayers to Krishna, because it's by his mercy, his kindness. And also, if we're grand disciples of Prabhupada, we can't neglect Prabhupada in any way either, because how many of us would be sitting here in front of Giriraj without Prabhupada's mercy? So Prabhupada's everyone's. So there must be prayers to Prabhupada. There must be prayers to Prabhupada. But should they stop at Prabhupada only? But we also shouldn't see Prabhupada as disconnected from Krishna, because he's Sakshad Hari also. And he was carrying Krishna's kripa shakti, Krishna's mercy, and this is described in so many places. This is what the devotees carry. They're carrying Krishna's energy, and this is how Krishna is merciful through the devotees. And even with such an exalted spiritual master as Prabhupada, he wasn't at all independent. What was the sweetness that so much attracted and captured the devotees around Prabhupada? What was that sweetness? My own realization was that it was the sweetness of Vrindavan, that he carried that with him, because we carry... I remember one time I was walking, the only time practically I was walking in Moscow, by the Kremlin area. And I was with His Holiness Bhakti Vigyanraj and some other devotees, and some people walked the other way, just opposite. And one of them looked at me, and terror entered my heart. We were dressed as devotees, too. I felt terror in my heart. He was carrying that in his consciousness. And he didn't attract me at all. But Prabhupada was carrying something else in his consciousness. What was that something else? He wasn't an independent person. It was Braja. It was the sweetness of Radha Krishna. And it was the magnanimity of Mahaprabhu. It was the kindness and the boldness of his Guru Maharaj. He was carrying all those things. But what struck me was the sweetness. The sweetness of Vrindavan. So he wasn't independent either. So So the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, Krishna Bhakti Rasita Bhavato Mati, the International Society for Spreading Krishna Bhakti Rasa, and that was Prabhupada's translation of Krishna Consciousness. The sweet, mellow taste of Bhakti Rasa. So, did I answer it? Or not? Okay, we answered it and we ended it at the same time. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Si Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki jai. Maharaj Patipurusha Savabhama Bhattacharya ki jai. Giriraj Maharaj ki jai. Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai. Si Giriraj Bhaktivinoda ki jai. Yeah.